He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Kevin Kyle's here, engineering. We are down in Hoover, Alabama for SEC Media Days and incredibly stoked, obviously, for everything that's happened. And Buck Rising back in the studio has done a great, great job the last few days holding down the fort and has put together some can't-miss moments from yesterday's show. Before we get into today, we want you to hear some of what happened. Roll Tide. We want you to hear some of what happened yesterday on these very shows.
This is what you missed.
Missed it by that much.
We look up and we see, bam, Scott Ramsey walking by, president CEO of the Franklin American Mortgage Music City Bowl.
The buzz is everything now, and the buzz is that we're even more so a can-do city that really doesn't have a lot of limits.
We get to hang out with Paul Feinbaum.
As an alum, I think Tennessee should be in the same category as Alabama and Florida, or LSU. I mean, elite programs, and it drives me crazy to hear fans accept mediocrity.
We basically did this next guest's job yesterday for him.
Yeah. We did. We did this whole show.
Not only did we make Butch Jones, we proved that he has a cardiovascular system and a digestive tract, which means he's a real human being. We did that on our show, and then we programmed all of Knoxville Sports Talk Radio. Did we not, Josh Ward from WNML?
Yeah, you kind of made Knoxville Sports Talk Radio skirt yesterday.
Oh! Well done. Yeah. Well done.
I'm so mad right now.
Today, you know, when head coach Derek Mason walks by, we just group hug, and that's our approach. We group hug, and then we snuggle them over.
Coach, did the SEC commissioner just come over and give you a hard time? Is that what just happened?
Commissioner Sankey just came by and saw the camo swag and looked in and said, hey, man, I like your style.
That's swag recognizes said. Swag is yeah, what it is.
Absolutely.
We went from one Vandy rep to two representatives of the team. As Oren Burks, linebacker for the team, Ralph Webb, running back for the team, they join us. I want to ask Ralph, there were people that were surprised you decided to come back. How did that process go down for you? What did you look at? How did you weigh it?
You know, I did a lot of talking with my family, a lot of praying, a lot of discussing with the coaches. Coach Mason in particular, I met with him a few times. Just analyzing the whole situation and see what would be best for me on the other side. And I think coming back this year will increase my draft stock, put me in a better position for this year's coming up draft, and also help my team put us in the best position to win more games this year.
How has the identity of the Vanderbilt Commodores football team evolved in your time at Vanderbilt?
Yeah, I think we just bought into Mason's scheme. I mean, he's a guy that's very energetic, as you guys know before. He just brings a lot of energy, and we feed off that energy, whether it's in practice, whether it's meetings, it doesn't matter. So, I mean, he's a guy about doing the right thing and being relentless, tough, and intelligent. So, just glad to have him as a coach, man. He makes things fun.
So lost in all of this is that he had to call home to mom and honey and find out how Buck was doing last night at 8:30. Like, they've got to check in. Is that demanded by Buck, or is that a you'd rule, or which one of you demands that the other one calls him when you guys are on the road away from each other?
Why don't you tell them what you called me this weekend? Like, what nickname did you give me?
My Arabian Sunflower.
Somehow Buck Rising gets his own voice into those promos every single nickname. Time. And his own nickname. By the way, this is the Braden and Fitz Show on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Arabian Sunflower producing up in Nashville.
That's sports talk radio. We're all self-involved. I got to give myself a little bit.
We appreciate that.
That's another fantastic job by you, though, and immensely proud of some of the guys that came by yesterday. Relentless, tough. Those words that were continually used by Vanderbilt yesterday are obviously part of their theme, part of what they're saying.
And that even goes with house chores around the house, because Oren Burks and Ralph Webb roommates, and apparently both do the dishes equally. They split the chores, so relentless and toughness. Even in the home front for Oren Burks and Ralph Webb.
I'm not sure
that Oren Burks does Ralph Webb's laundry, though. He was not willing to give us that answer.
I'm still not 100% convinced that they don't use, you know, paper plates and plastic cups. Like, it seems like
that would be very anti-environment.
Well, it would, but that seems very college kid to keep clean. You know, that seems easy.
That's true. But that requires a lot of taking out the trash, something college kids are not technically known for.
Well, what we do know is that
a lot of Alabama fans here.
There are a lot. I mean, the amount of Bama fans just coming on in, and they're coming in hot.
Like, we have something for that if you guys would like to hear
please.
It.
Yes. In fact, we've got audio of the fan. Oh,
perhaps.
We had something, Buck.
Perhaps.
Buck, you just said we had something.
Hang on one second.
Are you a complete fraud? Is this just
That's
this
absolutely
total,
what just happened. Okay, now we got it. Here we go.
Oh,
Alabama.
tobacco.
I want to be just like Alabama Man.
Worth the wait.
We got about 11 of those people in the lobby there. Not to totally broadbrush an entire fan base or anything.
No. Well, I already said there were only two Vandy fans this morning, so I'm making people happy all over the place. That's what we're doing.
I'm not kidding though. It is, and I can't tell. I know that the SEC catches a lot of flack for the "it just means more" thing, and I get that. I understand it, that doesn't resonate outside of the SEC, and people think it's stupid and it's a tagline. And it's very Butch Jones-ish actually.
Right, it is
of the SEC it to is. Do that. But I've been saying this a long time, the reason top to bottom the SEC wins so many more championships and is a better league in football is that they do care more. Now, sometimes that means they cheat a lot more and they cross those lines a lot more, which I think they do, but they do actually care more about every single one of these teams. And it's evident because we're going to sit in a hotel lobby this morning and they are going to be people that will have driven hours from all over the state of Alabama to sit in a – how big do you think that room is over there? Maybe the little roped-off area in the lobby. Maybe 50 feet?
50, yeah.
50 feet. A 50-square-foot space. They're going to drive for hours from all over the state
but
to sit in a 50-square-foot space to watch Nick Saban for 35 seconds.
You don't think that they would
do the same thing
in Ohio if the Big Ten was having their – or in Michigan?
I don't think Michigan would. I think Urban Meyer, Ohio State, yeah, it's probably pretty fair. But even then, Alabama is a different level. The University of Alabama, there is a fringe element that is bigger and greater and more passionate at Alabama than anywhere else in the country. They're just crazier.
I get that this is a crazy scene. I just don't know that I buy into this wouldn't be equally as crazy if it were Big Ten.
I've been to the Big Ten media event.
And it was right in the middle of
– It's not even close.
I don't know where it is. Is it right by Columbus?
No, I mean, it's in Chicago, but –
I mean, that's my point.
But there's nothing – I mean, I'm just telling you. The Pac-12 is like guys sitting on couches. Like, nobody
cares.
Right.
No, I get that. I get that the media level of involvement is different. I'm just not going to buy that you wouldn't have as many crazy fans here hours before Urban Meyer was walking in for Ohio State. Like, this is the single great moment. And I'll always go back to On Tour. Like, there is no other market where you can – You can say Roll Tide when you play in front of an Alabama fan. You're going to get a lot of cheers. It's a little different because you'll always have a split of Auburn fans. So you do, in every concert in country, you have to go out and say, where are my Auburn fans? Where are my Bama fans? In Ohio, you just walk out and you say, O-H.
Yeah.
And you don't have to that 40 times in a show, and they never get tired of it. So I'm going to believe that the 1%, let's say, would be equally well represented.
I'm not going out on a limb by suggesting that Alabama fans are like no one in Ohio State, Michigan fandom like ends up dying after the game because people get shot. Like that happens at Alabama LSU games. Not Ohio State, Michigan. There's a level of human decency that sometimes Alabama fans don't have. And that's not just – that's some of the SEC, other SEC schools as well. That's what my point is when I say that it means more and they cross lines. They cross over from good, you know, great fan to bad human being very quickly. There's a fine line there between those two things. That doesn't have – like LSU-Alabama plays, someone gets shot in a – you know, because there's a family dispute. That doesn't happen with – you don't read those stories about Ohio State, Michigan or, you know, in the ACC with Clemson and Florida State. You don't read about that. You read about that crazy lunacy with SEC fans. And that's both a compliment and an insult all at the same time.
And you know, you could be right. I fall somewhere in the middle of it. There are days that I sit there and think, you know what? It definitely, like, it's a craziness that can't be matched. And then there's days I'm more with Julian where it's like, I think it's perceived that it's a crazy. I can't tell sometimes if it really is that or if it's the guy, like, I always use the example of the guy I toured with for a long time that was like, he was convinced that he would never live anywhere other than Louisiana. It was like Baton Rouge is the single greatest place in the history of the world. And I was like, man, have you ever been to
– been to Baton Rouge?
Yeah, you were up there. And I was like, have you ever been many other places? And he's like, well, no, never been north of the Mason-Dixon line. He lives in New York now because once he experienced Manhattan, he's like, whoa, way better. I can't tell sometimes if the SEC means more is just because we're in the bubble of it and so we want to feel like
no.
It means more or if it really means
no,
more.
I've been studying this for 12 years and top to bottom – Nobody cares. No one fan base cares more than another one fan base. Maybe Alabama's crazier, but like Ohio State fans are just as passionate about Ohio State football as anybody else is. Clemson fans are just as passionate about Clemson. Oklahoma fans are just as passionate about Oklahoma. You learned about the Clemson fans the hard way this year.
Yeah.
So it's not about the top. It's about 1 to 14.
Sure.
You know, you get to the bottom half of every other league, and there's just no way it even comes close. The passion, because there's no other sport. The reason is that, and it's a very simple explanation. There were no pro sports. Right. If you go to Chicago or Pittsburgh or any of these major metropolitan areas around the country, they are pro sports towns. They don't talk about college football the way we do in every major metropolitan area in the South.
And that's true.
That's Birmingham. That's Nashville. That's Charlotte. That's Atlanta. That's Jacksonville. That's Tampa. That's Houston. These are all SEC cities now, and a lot of it's because there's no pro sports in any of these states. In the state of Arkansas, what do you think they talk about on sports talk radio 24 hours
sure.
a day? Arkansas sports. I mean, there's nothing else happening for 50 or 60 years until we got some pro sports teams, and now we've got the Predators. Now we've got things like the Carolina Panthers and, you know, all these other things that have now come into the – but for the 50s and 60s and 70s, it was all college football, and that's where the passion started.
No doubt. The passion is obviously there in a big way for people. We're hearing on and off the record about a particular team you wouldn't expect, and they're up today. So we'll tell you who everybody seems to be suddenly high on. It's an unexpected team that some think may be better than the Vols. We'll tell you who that is, and we'll talk about it next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. I'm feeling froggy, so we're going to start this segment out by giving away some free stuff. Caller number 5-615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Just put it in your phone. Get ready. Caller number 5 going to win a 4-pack of tickets to see the Cincinnati Reds take on the Miami Marlins at the Great American Ballpark Friday, July 21st. The game time, 7:10 p.m. Eastern time. Caller number 5-615-737-1025. 1025. I didn't even ask your permission, Buck, and I'm sorry about that. So I hope you're ready for that because the phones will explode.
I hold grudges.
That's a fair point. That is a fair point. So
healthy behavior, Buck.
But here's something we told you earlier that the world seems to be hot on Vandy, and I think that's a little bit in relation to what they expected from Vandy. I think that's kind of like, you know, there's this moment where you don't expect a lot from that one friend. You've got one friend that all he has to do is show up on time, and you're like, oh, man, he's doing his job today. Like, that's sort of where everybody – like, I think the expectations were low. You got the one friend that wore, like, a collared shirt for the first time in a year, and you're like, ooh, that's sort of where we are with Vandy. So that doesn't surprise me that much because I think the expectations – coming in, for me, I thought people would have very low expectations on Vandy. Now they seem to have moderate expectations. That's a win. What has surprised me, and I think will surprise many of you, are the number of people that are straight in. They are buying in to Kentucky, and it's not one, it's not two, it's not three. It's several people that have come in and said, hey, I wouldn't be surprised if Kentucky finishes third in the East and ahead of the Vols. Braden Gall, where do you lie on Kentucky?
I think there's a lot of positives to be found and to be said about the Kentucky Wildcats and the job Mark Stoops has done. Now, let's be very clear. He's still 19-30. He's 11 games under 500 as a head coach. He's had multiple opportunities, much like A&M, with hot starts and then has had really bad second halves to the season. That almost happened again last year when they started out, 5-3, had an opportunity to be in the race and then got beat by Georgia, got beat by Tennessee. Okay, you beat Austin Peay. The big one there, of course, was to beat Louisville. And you beat Louisville, and that gets you to a bowl game, and then you lose to Georgia Tech, and you end up at 7-6. You still got smoked by Florida. You still lost to Southern Miss. You still got smoked by Alabama, no shame there. And you lost to the teams that were better than you in the SEC, and that's Georgia and Tennessee. So, in the East, that is. So, I think foundationally, Mark Stoops has done a good job building this program. And now he's got Steven Johnson, who I think the interesting thing we haven't talked about from a quarterback standpoint, Steven Johnson is here at Media Days. Drew Barker is not. They are considered to be in a quarterback battle. So what Mark Stoops is saying is even if Steven Johnson is a backup, Steven Johnson is going to be a captain on this team, a leader on this team, right? So even if he doesn't win the job, I think he'll be the starter. They got 8 guys back on offense, 8 guys back on defense, so a lot of people returning for this team. Statistically, this team wasn't very spectacular outside of the top 100 in passing, outside of the top 100 in rushing defense, which is a big problem. So I think foundationally this program has grown. I don't see the overwhelming talent there in if they want to take a step and become a bigger player. Now, the one thing they've got going on in the SEC that everybody else, they've got their schedule sets up pretty well. Southern Miss, Eastern Kentucky, at South Carolina. Okay, that's tricky because South Carolina's got a lot of buzz too, right, this media event. They got Florida, Eastern Michigan, Missouri, Mississippi State, Tennessee, Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, Georgia, and Louisville. I don't see LSU. I don't see Auburn. I don't see Alabama. And that if you're not playing the big three from the West, there could be opportunities there for Kentucky to take some strides. So I think that's probably the reason. Really good offense. Questions about the defense. But a lot of reasons to like them. So I think there's reasons why this stuff is going on right now with Kentucky. But to suggest that they are better than Florida, Georgia, or Tennessee, I still think is a little far-fetched. I think you need to see them knock off one of those big boys and actually beat them head-to-head and then beat them in the standings for them to actually take that next step. And I guess it's possible it happens this year. I'm not picking it.
Third in the SEC in rushing, 20th in the nation in rushing. Benny Snell's comes back, and you're talking about somebody that is a freshman, went over 1,000 yards. I think a lot of people are buying in that he's going to he's just flat out going to get better. And I think that's you've got to buy every one of these teams has to buy an if, right? So the if for Kentucky is if they can run the ball better than they ran it last year, they can sort of
which
hide.
Was pretty good,
right? But that's their key because they've got to continue to get better there to hide whatever their deficiencies may be at quarterback. Because I don't think we know.
I think it's the other way around. I think they need to be more balanced. I think they're going to be good at running the football. I think they have to add another dimension to the passing game. And Steven Johnson's a very good athlete. He showed that he can make things happen with his legs. Drew Barker's a much better passer. So which of these two quarterbacks is going to be the guy that can actually develop a balanced offense and give them a passing attack? I think that's the question. Steven Johnson, the much better running quarterback of the two. Drew Barker, the passing quarterback. So what Mark Stoops does on offense there, we'll have to find out and see. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens.
That all comes back to that's what people are buying into. You're either buying into, hey, they're going to be able to run the ball so well that's going to be the thing that carries them, or they're going to get a little balance, which is only going to make them better on offense.
Yeah.
That's going to mask, you know. And you mentioned South Carolina.
Defense has to get better, though.
And you mentioned South Carolina. That I think that that's one way that those two programs are mirrored in the sense that I think a lot of people believe both programs are going to be able to put up points, albeit differently. They're going to be able to put up points. The question is, can any of them stop anybody? And that's going to be sort of the calling card. And it's
I think
funny
Kentucky
to me,
has much, and this may be the reason why Kentucky's getting the love, not South Carolina. South Carolina has the quarterback and Jake Bentley. That's the clear-cut guy. But I think Kentucky has much more upside on defense than South Carolina. And I think that's probably why you're seeing a lot of love for Kentucky and maybe a subdued amount of love for South Carolina.
Interesting and funny to me that we've reached a point in the SEC East where South Carolina, you've said all year, hey, you remember they got to learn how to tackle, right? And then you've got Kentucky where you're saying, man, I don't know, the defense has to take some steps. You've made the point, and I think you're right, that Vanderbilt's defense has more questions than we've seen in a long, long time. You can start to go up and down, and for all of us that generationally grew up in this era where it was like nobody can touch SEC defenses, part of the reason the SEC is in some eyes down this year, there's more parity in the SEC, isn't just because of the quarterbacks need to step up, it's because the defenses have more question marks.
Yeah, Tennessee's defense struggled down the stretch last year, a lot of that due to injuries, but now they've got to replace those guys in the defensive line. You look at Missouri, they're not a particularly great defensive team, even though they used to be under Gary Pinkel. They've got to figure that out. Barry Odom, the new head coach, does. Florida's the one team that plays great defense. Georgia has 11 guys back on defense. That's all 11, in case you don't know how many players play on football teams. But they particularly weren't great last year. They were very young and need to make more plays. Alabama, we know how great they are. LSU, those are two great defenses. We think Auburn's going to be good. A&M, what's their biggest problem? Can't stop the run. They've had a bad defense. Ole Miss, okay, solid on defense. They need to take steps forward. I mean, go up and down the list. Arkansas gave up almost 7 yards per play last year. That's like 123rd in the – I mean, it's awful. So the defensive lines and I rattled off the names. I think it was Monday where you go Derek Barnett, Miles Garrett, you know, on and on down the list, English, Charles Harris, all these great players in the SEC on defensive lines, like the top 9 or 10 sack guys in the league last year. They're all in the NFL now. So there's going to be new faces on defense. They're going to have to find some places. And I'm not worried about it. I think they're going to be good. But that is a big storyline. Quarterbacks getting better, defenses getting worse. Is that a big storyline in the SEC this year? It's very possible.
It also plays into why people think that Florida and Georgia will be clear-cut 1 and 2 in the East, because I think right now most people think they're the only two teams you can bank on that are going to play at least competent defense. And so that's where we are. It shows you what a change in the SEC. The change will continue to evolve. We'll get some great analysis on it coming up. Next, Laura Rutledge from the SEC Network are going to join us. We'll hang out with her, get her thoughts. We're doing that next up on Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Buck Rising back at the studio doing all the hard work. Julian Council finally shows up.
I cannot imagine why Julian Council would have shown up at this exact moment.
Yeah, well,
I cannot figure it out.
If you are just tuning in,
I'm trying to put my finger on it.
We are at SEC Media Days thanks to Pepper Boxing, Volunteer Hose and Gasket, Walker Chevrolet helped us get down here. And as we've done throughout the week, we try and get really famous people to come on the show that are smarter than we are. And that we've done it again.
And better dressed than us.
Always better dressed. There's no doubt about that. Laura Rutledge from ESPN SEC Network. Laura, thanks for taking some time this morning.
What's up, guys?
We're living the
top
dream.
Top of the morning to you.
Yeah, you're down here early.
It's good, to see you guys this early.
So let me, we'll get into stuff that doesn't matter, but we'll start with this significant conversation, actually, for once. Usually we start light. We'll go heavy out of the game.
Oh, okay.
Yesterday, it felt like all of a sudden there was this huge momentum for Vandy. And what we can't decide, is that a pro-Vandy thing or is that really an anti-Tennessee thing where they're just kind of balancing the scales?
Yeah, that's interesting. It could be more of an anti-Tennessee thing, but I don't know why that would be somebody's commentary, because at this point, no one's going to pick Tennessee to win the East. I'm not saying they won't, but it's a long shot for sure. I think people like Derek Mason and Ralph Webb. I mean, those guys are fun to listen to. Derek Mason always has a good showing here. Whether that's translated to the field all the time, you know, it sort of started to last year. But before that, I mean, even his debut here, it's hard not to like that guy. And I think the same is true for somebody like Ralph Webb, too, who's sort of the elder statesman of this team now, which is fun to see. I mean, Ralph Webb, in my opinion, needs to be even more involved offensively next year. And I think they can do a lot more with him. He could be more dynamic, even the receiving game, and who else is going to do it? So to me, I think that's the deal, why people may be a little bit pro-Vandy. I think they like the guys, and they're easy to like.
You look at the coaches and who've come through, and we sort of asked Butch Jones on Monday, just don't screw it up and just show a little bit of humanity. And I think to some degree he did that. I thought Jim McElwain yesterday extremely laid back, unless somebody asked him about the shark photo,
which
again, I thought the question was interesting and his answer was even more interesting. But other than that, I think Jim McElwain extremely laid back. How did Kirby Smart and Jim McElwain comparably come off yesterday in their process through Hoover?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think Butch Jones really did well for himself here, as well as he could have. I think we saw a more human Butch Jones. Maybe he's finally realized that these phrases and the, you know, constant mantras don't really come off as well when you haven't lived up to the expectations that you've put for your program. It's not us as much as anything that's just actually come from inside their program, and they should be expected to do as well as they were the last couple of years. As for Kirby Smart, I thought he was more comfortable this year than he was last year, but he's still in that sort of new phase. He's still a little bit afraid to say too much, and now they're dealing with...
There's still a little Saban there, hasn't worn off.
There's a little Saban on him, but he's also dealing with extreme expectations for this team. In his second year as this coach, he's looking at a situation where they're going to be picked to win the SEC East by the media, at least at this point. So there's definitely a little bit of that there. And then for Jim McElwain, he's an interesting guy, because I think sometimes the laid back is a little bit just to make sure that everyone thinks he's laid back. You know,
yes.
That's that's a little part of it. So to me, I think that factors in. But I do like Jim McElwain's approach. And I would say that Florida, because they're not going to be picked to win the East, yet they've won it the last couple years thanks to some other teams dropping the ball, maybe literally, they're in a situation where they probably feel like, hey, I don't want to provide any more motivation for my team. I don't even have to. You know, Jim McElwain didn't want to come here. He doesn't need to have his players hear him say something here that's going to motivate them. I think they're already going to be motivated.
Where's the disconnect in your mind between McElwain and the Florida fan base?
That's a great question. To me, I think it's because he was hired to be an offensive genius and to develop quarterbacks, and he just frankly hasn't done that yet. Now, I don't know if that's his fault necessarily, but people don't look at it that way. And Florida fans have been itching for offense since the Tim Tebow era. The fact that we've had a different quarterback every year there since Tebow makes you say, well, something's not going right. And that's why he was brought in. Same with Doug Nussmeier. I mean, I think people talk about McElwain a lot, but Nussmeier probably deserves as much of the credit there for maybe not being able to create offense. So I think they may finally have the pieces, or at least the depth, to do what Jim McElwain may want to do, but it still may not be enough for Florida fans. They've gotten used to anemic offenses, and those offenses have been that. They've been boring. They've had nothing to offer the last couple of years.
Two more things on Florida before we move on. First of all, do you believe, because Jim McElwain, I don't know if he let it slip on purpose or if, like, he didn't actually do it or not, that he knows who his quarterback is. And obviously, Boog and Marcus Spears on SEC Now yesterday saying, listen, we know it's Malik Zaire, dude.
Yeah.
Come on, just tell us. Sounds like he knows who his starting quarterback is. I don't know if you believe that or not. And then, do you believe that he had nothing to do with LSU being the homecoming game for the Florida Gators?
So when you look at the Malik Zaire, Felipe Franks situation, why does Malik Zaire come there if he's not going to be the starting quarterback? I mean, I get it. He's going to have to earn it in a certain way, but you've got to think that there was a conversation had to get him to spend his time the last time that he has, the last chance he has in Gainesville. He's not going to do that unless he thinks he's going to start. And who knows? Maybe they play a couple quarterbacks. I mean, I don't see that happening. I think Jim McElwain would like to be a one quarterback guy. And then as far as the LSU situation, I would be surprised if Jim McElwain had anything to do with it, honestly, because I don't see him as one of those guys that wants to create that type of controversy. I think he'd rather stay away from that. And that will be huge. I mean, here's the reason why. This has turned into a legitimate rivalry in many sports between these two schools, and they all pay attention. So when Florida softball knocks out LSU softball in the Women's College World Series, they remember. When Florida baseball beats LSU baseball in Omaha in the College World Series finals for a national championship, they remember. There's a rivalry even in Florida and LSU gymnastics. I mean, this stretches across the board for all these different sports at these schools, and I think it will become very real, and Jim McElwain probably wouldn't have wanted to create that if he had his choice.
We were talking defensive lines, and I just want to rattle off a list of names. Derek Barnett, Jonathan Allen, Tim Williams, Darius English, Ryan Anderson, Carl Lawson, Charles Harris, Miles Garrett, Corey Vereen.
They're all gone.
All of them are gone.
Yep.
And I think that's to what you were speaking before we were so rudely interrupted by traffic, is that those are some studs.
Yeah.
And they're all gone, and that's what we're talking about when it comes to the defensive lines.
Brayden, you're making an interesting point, both of you, because I think when you look at the quarterback play, I actually do think these are kind of two separate categories, where quarterback play has just gotten better because we've got some young talent in this league, and for whatever reason they're finally coming back to the SEC. Felt like we went through a period of time there where the good quarterbacks in recruiting were kind of going out west or maybe even to the Big 12, and now we're in a spot where, you know, they're actually coming back to the SEC, which is great for the game, and they may actually have more success than they did before because they may not have these big, ugly guys right in their face from a defensive line perspective. And so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I think that will make this year more interesting. Good quarterback play only helps the league.
I know we got to let you go. Let me ask you one more quick one. What's better for the SEC, Alabama winning the national championship or somebody else from the SEC going to the playoff?
Somebody else from the SEC going to the playoff. I think that's why, I mean, I don't know what you guys think, but this feels a little boring at this point. You know, SEC Media Days even feels a little boring. And I know it's Alabama Day today, and maybe Nick Saban's going to say something that's going to be interesting.
Nope.
Right. So to me, I think we're looking at a scenario where for the overall health of the league, you need to have, you know, somebody else threaten this team. And maybe LSU could do it. Maybe Georgia could do it in a year or two. I don't know that they're ready to do it now. But it's hard to look around the league and say, okay, anybody's going to threaten this Alabama team. So it would be better for the SEC if somebody could.
Well, and there's a balance in every sport where you want the big bad guy to root for or root against because you want everybody to root against that team, but only to a point. After a few years of that, it's good, it's good, it's good. And then by the sixth or seventh or eighth year, you're like, all right, seriously, we need some more parity in the league now. And I think coaching is the issue. I mean, to be honest, if you're going to pinpoint,
I think so too.
It's coaching.
Because other teams have recruited well. Tennessee's recruited well. Florida's recruited well. LSU's recruited well. The list goes on and on. Yet maybe there hasn't been the talent development that we've seen at Alabama. And that has a lot to do with coaching. That has a lot to do with the fact that former head coaches have gone and coached there in Tuscaloosa as assistants, taken pay cuts and role cuts, you know, to just be there.
Fantastic stuff, guys. Follow her on Twitter at Laura M. Rutledge. Watch her on SEC Network. We appreciate it. I know you're busy you know, doing the TV thing. We appreciate a little time.
Of course. Guys, I hope you get your technical difficulties worked out. I'm rooting for you.
One step at a time. You know, that's you know, we're
semi-professional.
We're just champions of radio life. That's all.
Yeah, you guys are.
We have five-star producers.
Five-star hearts.
Five-star hearts.
Laura Rutledge, we appreciate the time. So
thanks, guys.
We'll take a second here, reset, get everything on our end, and then I want to get some reaction from Brayden on the question of what's best for the future of the SEC. We'll do that next up on Brayden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Buck Rising doing a great job back there. Julian Council here. We're at SEC Media Days. And, again, we're here thanks to the fantastic people at Pepper Boxing, Volunteer Hose and Gasket, Walker Chevrolet. Laura Rutledge joined us last segment. Want to get your thoughts on something. But first, let's give away some free stuff. Caller number 5-615-737-1025. Again, that's 615-737-1025. Yeah, that's right. You're going to win a pair of tickets to WWE Monday Night Raw, Bridgestone Arena, Monday, July 17th. Don't miss the big dog, Roman Reigns, Intercontinental Champion, Dean Ambrose, Women's Champion, Alex Bliss, many more. That's right. It's WWE Monday Night Raw, Bridgestone Arena, Monday, July 17th. Caller number 5-615-737-1025. Laura Rutledge, by the way, I don't think we could say enough positive things about somebody that covers the sport incredibly well. I mean, Laura Rutledge just does a killer job. She is great at her job and knows more college football than a lot of people will forget.
I think so as well.
Or she'll forget a lot more than people know, whatever that is.
There you go, yeah. She's forgotten more about college football more than anybody will know. There you go. And can do it all. Like, she's a great sideline reporter, great investigative reporter, but also a host as well. So she does a great job keeping Marcus Spears and Booger McFarlane and Greg McElroy and all those guys in line, which is much, much, much easier said than done up on that set. She makes a great point about the recruiting. We've made that point before. All these teams are recruiting at a high level. The coaching is the question. Where's the development? We talked a little bit about the defensive line play. I still think and this goes to our entire conversation, Fitzy, about whether or not the SEC is down or not. If you're going to compare the SEC to itself, absolutely the SEC is down. If you're going to compare the SEC defensive lines to itself, absolutely the SEC is down. It still doesn't mean it's not capable of beating anybody else in any other league or Alabama going to win a championship or whatever. It's just about, like you always say, keep this conversation kind of within itself. I rattled off those list of names now a couple of times this week. You can't expect those stars to leave a league and to just automatically be as good. So will there be higher scoring games in the SEC? I think one of the most interesting things Laura said is it could make for a more interesting and compelling league play, SEC schedule. So if that happens, I mean, listen, the league's already ridiculously high in the ratings. It's already got the most attendance. People pay attention to it the most. The SEC network is wildly more successful than all the other conference networks. So you look at all of that and you go, and now it's going to be more entertaining because the quarterbacks are better and the defensive lines aren't as good. Those two things directly relate to each other, right? Great defensive line play stops quarterback play. Well, if you don't have the great defensive lines, those quarterbacks could flourish, and that could make for a really fun, exciting year in SEC football.
I agree that it could make for fun, exciting year. I still think it's going to make for a conversation. I truly believe this fall the national conversation is largely going to be around, is the SEC broken? And I don't know that that's necessarily correct, but this is the way I look at it. If you walk into your high school reunion and everybody's put on weight, you don't look at yourself. You look at the guy over there that used to be like a supermodel, and you're like, whoo, porked out, put on fitty, right? Like, that's all you're thinking about. That's what the SEC is right now.
It's very rude of you, by the way.
Porked out, put on fitty. That is the SEC.
You're allowed to say that to your wife, but not to his face.
Well, and
if you're an Ohio State fan, you look at Auburn, you go, put on fitty.
And even if you're sitting there and you've put on 20, even if you put on 30, you're still looking over and you're like, yeah, but Michael Phelps over there put on 50, right? And that's what's happening right now. Like, I think everybody's at the reunion. Maybe everybody's porked out, but they're looking at the one guy that used to be a supermodel.
Yeah.
And now they're a little fluffy.
I think the ACC is going to have really good defensive line play, front seven play.
Especially NC State.
Especially relative to its own sort of situation there. I think the Big Ten in a couple of different places is going to be ridiculously nasty on the defensive line. But that's Ohio State and Michigan only. Penn State, pretty good. Everyone else in the Big Ten, nothing on the defensive line. The Big 12 doesn't play any defense at any position. And the Pac-12, well, they got a couple of teams. Washington, maybe USC, Utah, Stanford. There's a couple of teams that have some identity about defense, but most of that league is about offense, and especially the quarterback play. So the SEC defensive lines are still better than almost everybody else. That's what makes this season interesting from an ACC-SEC rivalry standpoint, is that the ACC has started to win those games routinely, except for Louisville and Kentucky. Florida State rivalry with Florida has been dominated. Georgia Tech gets a win last year. Clemson's been the more dominant team. Now, that's not really necessarily a fair rivalry because Clemson's a national champion and South Carolina's 3-9 2 years ago. But the ACC has made up major ground on the SEC. And I think the defensive line comparisons this year in those two leagues is going to be very interesting to watch, because all the talent in the ACC right now is on the D-line, and that's not necessarily the case in the SEC. We just need to see who those guys are. They need to develop, and we need to find out who those guys are.
Well, and that's a strong point that Laura made, that, you know, the SEC's just got to do a better job of recruiting. Now, the interesting thing is she mentioned the offensive line side of it. Well, if they're not recruiting as well on the defensive side, across the board on the D-line side, it's going to give some of these O-line guys a little bit of time to hopefully develop and get better. I mean, there's a point for
right.
her point is a valid one, that maybe Tennessee didn't get a ton of great starts, but they have a ton of starts, they have a ton of experience. Well, taking on a lower level of D-line talent is certainly going to help that offensive line look a little better in the process, and I think that that's got to mean something.
I mean, I do think the offensive lines are better in the SEC. Alabama, for example, I believe at Athlon, at our magazine, we've got Alabama ranked as the number one offensive line in the entire country. So it's not like we don't have it's not like the SEC doesn't have, like, they are very well respected. I mean, I think Florida's McElwain talked about it yesterday. Part of the reason they struggled, they had four scholarship offensive linemen when he got there. Now they're the best they could be the best offensive line in the league. Auburn has got one of the best offensive lines in the league. Mm-hmm. What do we, and so really Georgia is like the one team we're looking at going, you're supposed to be really good, but your offensive line sucks. So we need to find out about the offensive line. I think everybody else is in really good shape along the offensive line. They've recruited really well. I think they've recruited fine on the defensive line. I just think they're young. There's a rotational element to this year where they lost so many star upperclassmen that I think we just have to figure out who those stars are. I think the stars are going to be fine. I think the defensive lines are going to be fine. We just got to find out who some of those names are.
The stars will rise. It's just going to take time. And that's, again, it's a transitional year at some point in this process. You know, at some point in this process, it becomes a transitional year for what's happening at certain positions. So, it again, we're going into this offseason with more ifs, I feel like, across the team. More teams have more ifs than I can remember in a long time. And part of that is, I think we're sort of squarely on opposite sides of it right now. I'm looking at it saying, hey, you got to prepare yourself for if all of the ifs come out negative. And if they do, what does that mean for the SEC? Because I think that's a conversation. But at the same time, I'll acknowledge that you also have to look at the other end of the conversation, which is, what if all of the ifs come out as a positive? You know, and if all the ifs come out as a positive, then the SEC's up.
And I think a big part of preseason prognostication is about known commodities, because you're talking about the unknown commodities. You're talking about the ifs, right? Good and bad. What could happen if Florida gets great quarterback play? What could happen if Tennessee gets great quarterback play? What could happen if Georgia's offensive line is good? Or the opposite side of that. What if those are all bad? But the known commodities is a big part of when I look at teams and I try to predict what's going to be what, what's the most proven commodity in the SEC East right now? The Florida Gators defense. That's the most proven commodity over time. That's the one, like, they're, even though they lost eight guys and their defensive coordinator's gone, I still think the Florida defense by the end of the season is going to be the best defense in the SEC East. That's the most known commodity, in my opinion. Kirby Smart, unknown commodity. Butch Jones, his upside, unknown commodity. Defensive line for Tennessee, unknown commodity. South Carolina's defense, unknown commodity. What do we know? We know Alabama's going to be great, right? We know Auburn's going to run the football. We know Florida's going to play great defense. We know Texas A&M's going to go 5-0 and then finish the season 2-5. Like, there are certain things that we just sort of know, and I think figuring out, like, trying to limit the risk of the unknown is a big part of preseason prognostication, trying to pinpoint. And for the record, I filled out my ballot yesterday. I've got Florida winning the division because Florida's defense, to me, is the most proven commodity. Jim McElwain, the most proven commodity.
Amazing to me. And I'm gonna hold you to the latter half of that. Because what I'm hearing, Jim McElwain, most proven commodity. Because eight new starters on defense. I mean, the most proven commodity is Georgia, in my mind, with 11 guys coming back on defense. Like, I don't know that that makes them better.
But they weren't any good, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, but I think that we're going to take the – you have the question of 11 guys you know versus eight guys you don't. And that's the interesting part of proven commodity to me. Like, I think that Jim McElwain is the proven commodity. We just believe because he always finds a way, much like we believe that no matter who plays quarterback for – I mean, Julian could be the quarterback for Alabama. They'd still win a national championship. So
I don't know about that.
Kevin Kyle could win a national championship behind center. I think that we just believe
I think
that.
Kevin Kyle would be eaten alive at center.
Behind center.
Oh, like, behind center. Yeah.
That's what we believe. We'll get Tony Barnhart's thoughts on all things SEC, and we'll do that next up from Gridiron Now on Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game.